This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
TikTok talent, they'll have their shop. I do know people who've made like 40 grand a month.
This week on Unbox, I'm speaking with Hannah Holland, who is the founder and CEO of HLD Talent. HLD is a bit different because they focus exclusively on female talent.
I still see those gender pay gaps. So it's very interesting when people talk to me about gender pay gaps because I see them but in a different side.
Hannah manages GK Barry alongside a number of other female-led creators.
Grace, one of the things that people love about her, she's very humble.
And in this episode, we're going to get into how you can, as a female creator, find success in 2024.
I want to be the next biggest star tomorrow. You need to earn your stripes to be that person.
We're going to get into all of that today with Hannah. We hope you enjoy. Where do we begin? Hannah, what's your business? Who are you? How did you get into this business?
So my name is Hannah Holland. I am the founder and CEO of HLD Talent. I'm 29, so I started quite young. I launched HLD when I was 24, and we are a female talent management company. It's kind of evolved over the years from it started as like marketing, realised the niche for talent management and creating a full 360 effect, like includes like PR, us creating brands of talent, podcasts, and trying to be like the difference in the industry of, you know, protecting women. This is, I was saying to you before, this is like one of the only industries where women usually make a lot more than men.
Why?
It's a great question. I'm not incredible. I'm not really sure. I think it's always different. Like, obviously, you manage the side men, so it's, you know, it's a completely different kettle of fish in terms of YouTube. But in terms of digital, I think women know how to sell to their audience better than men. Like I said, it's not one rule for one and one rule for the other. But in terms of what I've usually seen, especially when we started, we very much came from this reality TV model and eventually evolved as TikTok grew and all these digital platforms. But in terms of those reality TV stars, men didn't know how to interact with their audience or understand their audience. But I do think the world's changing. So I think now you'll see the difference, but I still see those gender pay gaps. And so it's very interesting when people talk to me about gender pay gaps because I see them but in a different side.
Yeah, and you were saying, you know, protecting women is a really important thing that's needed in this space because there's a lot of manipulation and, you know, mismanagement by male managers. Can you dig into that a little bit? What are some of the things that you've seen? What are some of the horror stories out there?
Oh, you always hear a lot of horror stories. I think some stories, I take them with a pinch of salt because I think people can leave on bad terms and, you know, you can exaggerate the truth. So I always try and be fair to other managements and not really listen too much. But some of the stories I have heard where those agencies have disappeared or, you know, things like that is very much stealing money, but on like a large scale. So you'll hear like 100 grand and you'll be like, ooh, or kind of selling your soul. So doing things that you wouldn't necessarily want to do, pushing women to maybe go and do like lingerie posts when they wouldn't actually want to be in their lingerie. Little things like that where you think that is taking advantage of, especially someone who's young in the industry, you know, or working towards someone's favour. So, oh, do that post and you'll do it for cheap because actually that's their friend. Where things like that, I don't necessarily love to hear either, because regardless, you should be paid for your time and your audience and what you are giving your audience.
Yeah. And what do you think are some of the biggest mistakes that female creators especially make when they're starting out and maybe things start to get big for them, or they come off a show like Love Island and they get approached by everyone? What are some of the biggest kind of management mistakes that you often see?
Don't accept everything you get. I think that's something that, you know, I see a lot, and I think I've been criticised for it before. Oh, you should take everything as it comes in because they won't get that opportunity again. If you manage someone right, they will, but on a tenfold. So for me, I like to work on long term, not short term. I think the Love Island train is very much known for essentially rinsing talent of cash and then spitting them back out to the world. You're coming from someone who's done like a 9-to-5. that a normal job, had a normal life, normal friends, to being the most sought-after person in the industry. And they usually have about 3 months to really capitalize. And but within that is, if you capitalize smart, you're capitalizing for the next 5 years. And we've seen it with, you know, the Molly Mays of the world and, you know, different talent. But then at the same breath, you do understand that some talent really, they probably just want to capitalize on that quick cash and then move forward. Another thing that I see, especially when people are trying to get into the influence world for women, is going straight down the sexy lingerie route. And you don't need to do that. I think it's really hard to come back from that once you've gone down that sexy route, because if you want to go high fashion, you're telling me, you know, I want to work with like Jimmy Choo and, you know, these like luxury brands or Farfetch. It's, you know, they're looking for a lifestyle. They're looking for essentially your page to withdraw them in and people to feel part of that. And if you're just in your lingerie because you know that's going to get you 24,000 likes, that's what rogue number I pulled out, but you know, you're going to get the mass audience and the mass likes and engagement, you know, that's not a true representative of your audience. I think, you know, in terms of your engagement, obviously it has to be there, but people are also paying for essentially a cheaper version of a mainstream ad. So, you know, they can reutilize that content in a different way.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, this is the thing, I've not really worked in the female talent space necessarily.
It's interesting,
right?
I've never worked in the male talent space.
Well, there we go, that's what I'm saying, this is why we're here. But it's interesting you even say that, it's something I would never have even thought about, that actually, yeah, the, you know, and I can imagine to the point on male managers, I wonder what sort of pressure, as you're saying, sometimes comes to women to go down the sort of sexy lingerie route and go into that world, maybe because there's more money in the short term, but actually what does that do for brand image long term? You talk about long-term planning. What are some of the sort of traits of a long-term plan for a talent that you'll work with?
So I guess it depends on what kind of talent we're working with. So for like a TikTok talent, and they tell me where they want to be a presenter, we're very much looking at what are they doing across their TikTok now. I think for women, the world has changed so much for women talent, because I think at one point when I started, it was very much that sexy pictures. And I think for a long time, our agency was known a bit being a bit more sexy in terms of the women that we managed. They were they are beautiful. And they were sexy, and they had, you know, there wasn't reels, it wasn't video based, it's completely different. Whereas now the world's completely changed to this, everyone's going more video based, everyone's having to evolve. And that's why you're seeing some big influencers that you once everyone knew fall behind, because they're not willing to adjust. So in terms of how that long term would look for us is, how relatable are you? Because everyone wants relatability. If you're telling me you want to be a presenter, are you willing to do the vox pops? Are you willing to essentially put yourself out there? Because to be a presenter, it's difficult. I could tell you now, every single talent I've ever met in the last 2 years has told me they want to be a presenter.
Like that every single one.
Literally every single one.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know.
Is it just the, you know, the one reference
glamorous
point that, yeah, well. Is it the one reference point that everyone has?
It's,
like,
yeah,
that's successful. Okay, well, I know, I grew up with TV. I see people on TV, they seem like they've got, you know, that's the reference point I have for a success in my career. Or, I mean, because I always think about it like, but why necessarily presenting? Like, that's a skill in itself, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I had Els the Witch on my pod, and she was telling me about, there's these different types of presenting, but the one that she does, and, you know, she has men give her a really hard time, so I kind of rate her for it, is, you know, very much you're reading like off this board here, but you've got someone talking to you here, and then you've got an audience there. It sounds glamorous. It looks glamorous when people are like hosting a red carpet and all that. It's difficult. It's very, very painfully long. We did, Grace presented the Pride of Britain red carpet, and that was 4 hours in heels. I was running up and down. It was an incredible event, and, you know, but it's also, how do you keep a talent's morale up, because it's tiring.
Yeah.
It's, you know, as women, you know, we're like in heels, she's wearing a very tight dress, you know, that is, it's a completely different kettle of fish in terms of, to then you've got TV presenting, and we've done that, and that's a 12-hour day. And it's long. And that's why anytime I've said to anyone, you want to present, I'm like, right, well, let's get you doing some bits and pieces, because if you find that boring, you're never going to get to the 12-hour day and find that exciting.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to really love it.
Yeah. And be willing to graft and get the skill set to be good at it, right? Because that's the bit that separates. I think a lot of people on social, they'll be like, yeah, I can just be a presenter. And it's like, no, that's a whole skill in its own right. And you need to put the graft in, as everyone has had to do historically as well.
Yeah. And you know what's so funny? I saw this trend running around on TikTok, and everyone was like, just reading the screen for, was it like CBBC? And everyone's like, yeah, I've got the skills to be a presenter. I'm like, that is just very small. That's in your bedroom. You could have done it 15 times. That is just never how it's going to run. Mm. You know, I love the fact that people find their passion for doing that, but it takes more than that. And 100%. I think people look at some people and they're happy to criticize online, but it's taken a lot of graft. It's taken a lot of lunches with, you know, commissioners and different presenters and different teams to make that happen. But then someone to be like, I could do that.
Yeah. Come on. And that's where you need management, right?
Yeah. But it's like, how many times does Sidemen probably get, oh, I could make that video, I could do that. Mm. But can you? It's a full functioning machine at this point.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, looking at creators now who are sort of, you know, getting somewhere in their career, when is the right time for management, do you think? And what is the role of a manager? Like, what does management even do for you? Or what can it do for you?
Well, it depends, really. So it's really interesting. I've met people who've self-managed, and they're, you know, I always struggle with that concept, because I do think a manager's job is to protect you. We aren't just here just to collect 20% and go. That's just never the role. If that was the role, Jesus Christ, I would be less stressed. You know, it's very much, you know, you're planning someone's whole career. When things go wrong, you're the person that gets called. When things go right, you're the person that gets called. People, we give such a persona online now of like how exciting it is. And I love my job, and I think to do this job you have to love it, because there is so many moving parts. You know, I walked in earlier and you were like, how are you going on? I was like, I've got three talent brands launching the next 2 weeks, one's launching today. I'm very like, and that's around also all the social stuff we're doing, all the TV side of things, approvals, you know, PR strategy approvals, different interviews, making sure things are all running smoothly. And then also I'm a CEO of a company. So I then also have to check in with like my chairman, and I've got, you know, my staff, and there's like 14 of us. So there's all these different moving parts, but at no point can anyone feel like there's anything going wrong or that you don't have time for them.
Yeah.
So it is always a battle. In terms of management, I think the reason a manager is so important is because of there is that safety aspect. You should be planning 2-3 years ahead at all times. You should know where you're heading to get there. And that having someone objective to that is so crucial. If you're in it, and that's why when new people start my company, I ask them to go through and say, what is it that we're doing wrong that you think? Look at our website. Look at, you know, how we're doing things internally. Because when you're so in something, how can you see objectively? It? And it's the same with talent. And there's, I think a lot of, this isn't for everyone as well. Like I said, this is very much, you know, you see a bit of time and like bits and pieces. Mm. But all the talent I once knew who are all very self-managed are now getting management, because I think it's so easy to become stagnant. You know, you're not doing outreach. You're not creating pitches to brands. You know, it's all that's inbound.
Yeah. There also, it's just having that coaching as well, that constant day-to-day, like, how are you getting on? Like, what do you want to achieve? And how can we help you? How can you help yourself? What are things you can be looking at? As you say, it's so difficult to look at yourself. And for anybody else who's even building your own personal brands, whatever it might be, it's the same premise. You need people objectively to you to give you feedback, to say, you know what, that wasn't quite right. Or have you tried this thing or this thing? And I think that's where management really helps. It's professional advice, right, ultimately.
Yeah. You know, and I've met talent before who are... it's not necessarily work, because I refuse to be a yes, yes man. Mm. I'm not going to tell you that you're amazing all the time, because the fact is, yes, you're amazing as a person, but that decision isn't quite right. That brand deal isn't quite right. Or I know you can do better, because that is what you're putting out to the world. You have to, everything you're putting out, people are looking up to you. One mistake and it's that your audience no longer believe you. That is a very trusting role, and one that I think people take for granted sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think every day people should be so grateful, because this industry rolls so quickly that, you know, you'd never want to be left behind. And like my favorite thing I've always learned is, you know, be nice to people on your way up, because they're the people going to bring you back up, you know, 100%. When you're coming back down, you know, and we all will go through that like that.
100%. Grace,
Yes.
Grace. So you and Grace have worked together for a very long time now, right?
4 years.
4 years. That's a long time. In this, like, I mean, that's in TikTok years.
In TikTok forever. Years, that's the beginning.
That's forever. And obviously she has just had an unbelievable trajectory. You probably saw it from the very beginning. She's really blown up, I think, over the last year. I mean, you'll know, right? Like year and a half. I'm sure you felt everything's just gone to another level.
Mm.
What's that been like for you? How would you, from the outside looking in, how would you kind of detail Grace's journey to somebody who doesn't know it? How has she been able to stand out and be so different?
She was probably the first TikToker I saw who was unapologetically herself, without having to put filters on, didn't care about looking pretty online. And I say that respectfully, Grace, you know, I love you. But, you know, she would literally wake up from a hangover, like makeup down her face, and be like, guys, you know, she had this like raw sense of herself, you know, that no one was projecting. And I remember when I first saw her online, you know, she was like doing live tutorials on like waxing your vagina and stuff, like some crazy stuff. And, you know, she was doing impressions of like if you saw a girl that you really didn't like out, and she just felt so relatable. And at the time, no one was paying TikTokers. Like literally, you couldn't force things. You know, we make jokes internally now where me and YMD Ella, we made up like dances with clothes to try and get her paid deals. First 2 years, you know, she really wasn't making money, and it was very much. There was actually a video, and I need to find it because I really want to use it one day, where she put on like a close friend. She was like, guys, no one wants to work with me. Like, I just don't know why I'm in this industry. And she's really upset. And to the point now where it's like, you know, we're turning things away because she's just too busy. But her journey has very much been 2 years of hard graft. I think a lot of people think she had this really quick come up. She really didn't.
No such thing as overnight success. I mean, that's in social, so true, right?
Oh, you go overnight successes. You've been grafting for a few years, and then one day everyone knows who you are. So you must have started yesterday. You know, it's the same with like with musicians, everything. And we worked really hard with her to how do you not change who somebody is? How do you keep them really raw, authentic, but commercialize them so they have a full career out of this? I always knew she would be something bigger than herself. I always knew she would be like the next big thing, you know, comedian. And at one point, you know, we tried to position her as like a stand-up comedian. You know, we've made decisions that have been like, oh, this doesn't fit right. You know, you're fitting someone who doesn't normally, who is different, because she came about in the Molly May era where it was, you know, a completely different type of talent, and you're trying to build them up. So it's, you know, there's no harm in making mistakes, as long as you're all doing it together.
That's it. And what was the turning point for her, do you think? From the outside looking in, I would say Locked In felt like a real movement for me in terms of elevation into just... it was like the first kind of leg, and then it sort of went in more mainstream, and now obviously it's just ongoing. But what for you felt like the biggest first kind of move?
So mine isn't Locked In, because I remember when we got Locked In, originally there was a discussion about maybe us not doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Because we were like, oh, is this the right move? You know, we don't want it to go down this reality TV route. And obviously the show is like a big brother, but for digital. So, you know, there was like, I think 2 days we were like, and she was like, no, I'm doing it. I was like, phenomenal. I remember it was probably last summer, and it's when the brand deals started coming in, and they were higher price points, and they were more high-end brands. So it was, you know, it just felt like everyone was
KFC
talking
was
about. KFC was the biggest thing we've probably done, as an agency. You know, it was something I was incredibly proud of. And that, I think when she did KFC, that's when everyone was on the radar. But in terms of how I felt she kind of came up through the digital space, podcast was definitely a massive one. And then that kind of had an ongoing result. And that was an interesting, because she originally said no to the podcast. And like, she's always been very open that. Like, it was me who was saying, no, you're going to do this podcast. Because I knew she was more scared of being rejected by the audience and people not liking her. And I was like, but the thing is, the worst case scenario, people don't like it. You know, we've all failed. I was like, but you know, this could be the best thing you've ever done. And I was right.
There we go.
Once again, there I'm joking. Go.
And that's no, why you have a manager.
You know, I have made the wrong decisions a couple of times, but you know, you know, and also having the right team, the fellas was such an authentic team for us, because like, you look at Cal Freezy, he's very authentically himself. So when we met him, it was very much, he was happy for us to be ourselves. The moment a team tries to change you, run.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, and the podcast has done unbelievable things. And yeah, obviously seeing how, And that was the piece where, for me, I was saying about Locked In being interesting in terms of a slight movement for her, was because it just allowed people to get that longer form engagement with her personality, right? It's like you see TikToks, and obviously, yes, even the frequency of TikToks, you get to know somebody, but you really get to know them in those slightly longer form settings, which is why the podcast has done so well as well, right? Because it's allowed her to shine through in a platform that's fully her own. And obviously, you just announced second leg of the tour, right? Or the next tour?
Next tour, February. Next tour, yeah, February. We sold it out in like just under light 10 work, minutes. I think we added two extra dates. I think we did 13 to 15,000 tickets.
That's incredible.
Something crazy. Yeah. We did London Palladium twice, which is pretty incredible. And I remember saying to her, we're going to do London Palladium next year. She was like, no, I'm not doing it. I was like, we're doing it. You know, I think Grace, one of the things that people love about her, she's very humble. Mm. You know, she's no different to how when I first met her. She really doesn't act in any way other than just like a normal girl from a little town.
Yeah.
And that's how she's always been. You know, if I'll be like, no, let's go shopping. She's like, nah. Right.
Cool. I'll go on my own then.
Yeah. No, you know, you really wouldn't. She doesn't have that boastfulness about her. And I think that's why, you know, I think.
That's why she connects, right? Because she's so real and so authentic with people.
I think when people start, you know, influence, when they do incredibly well, I get it. You're going to spend your money. But you know, you always hear about it where those influencers who started as not normal people, then they're all in the designer and all this and they boast about the things they've bought. It's an easy to create this divide, especially in an economy like today. So it's something to always be really wary of.
And what are some of the lessons that young creators who are looking to maybe follow a career path like a Grace, what are some of the things that they should be, lessons they should be taking from her success or from her career?
Don't go to a peer pressure of what the industry is telling you should be, because the industry will always lead you in a certain direction, and going in your own direction you're ultimately walking for someone else to run. So, and that's always, I think, the way people should look at it. You know, you're a leader, you're not a sheep. So I think staying true to yourself, but I also think taking management's advice is really important. You know, that I have heard it a million times where people are like, nah, and they think they know better than me. And I'm thinking, okay, that's fine. You know, if you think that, that's fine. But I have been doing this job for 8 years. So I feel like I do know something, like a little bit, or at least take it, you know.
Consider it.
Yeah, like don't just shut it down. I think in terms of like there's different ways in. And I think a lot of people think it's going to happen overnight. And I find that to be quite detrimental to a lot of talent. You really need to ensure that you're doing everything you can to position yourself. This is the most oversaturated industry. It never was, but now it is.
Now it is, yeah, exactly. It's that thing of, you know, when everyone finds gold and then everyone starts digging and all dries up, that's it. And the people who made it first, they're the ones who are doing well. And then, yes, you have the exceptions, but you need to be different and really carve your own lane. I think that's what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense. Right, should we play a game?
Always.
Have a game. In this box, I have a number of cards. Can you please take a card, tell me what's on it, or read out what's on it, and then tell me what comes to mind, please.
More women than men follow influencers across age brackets.
What comes to mind? What do you think?
Yes. Looking at the age brackets, yeah, but I only know that to be true because I see everyone's stats. Usually, for me, I couldn't necessarily manage a woman who's like 90% male. That usually kind of means that he's probably a bit more sexy. You're looking from a brand's perspective of what sells. And unless you're able to, you know, do Manscaped or more male brands, it is very difficult. So, yeah, I think that is true.
That's an interesting point as well. If you are a female creator, like, try and cultivate your audience based on some commercial strategy behind it, i.e. if you're trying to build an audience purely of men, then that is going to limit your potential for brands who want to work with a woman to market to men. That's a much smaller audience than working with women to market to women.
I think it's easier to, as a woman, to create an audience full of men than I think it is for a woman to make an audience full of women.
100%.
And whether that sounds sexist or not, I'm not sure, but it is very much a case of what you're projecting as a talent. So interesting enough, my audience a few years ago was all men.
Well, what can I say?
No, but it's because I managed a lot of talent who had come from maybe more the glamour scene. So if they'd tag me, then all of a sudden all their audience would come over to me. It's taken me actually a long time for it to be a bit more, well, not that I was actually intentionally trying, but naturally as I've got older and, you know, I do a more podcast and I talk about my business more, young women kind of follow me more because I think, you know, I get a lot of DMs asking me as like an influencer, how do I go down this route? How do I go down this? Like, how do I create my own media pack?
Mm.
And it's a different from before. It used to be like some guy being like, all right, babe.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't have that
times
anymore.
Have changed. Times have changed.
I'm not sure if I'm sad. I'm
joking. Growing up. That's it. Next one, please.
Saving grace. Just to say saving grace.
Oh, yeah. What, how's it feel to have been behind one of the biggest shows in the country?
An honour, to be honest. It's like something that I don't take lightly. I feel like I'm somebody who I find it awkward to talk about things I've done well. I'm pretty good at talking about the lessons I've learned, but I think with Saving Grace, one of the reasons we've done so well, you know, the production team are incredible, Grace is incredible, and my team worked really hard as well on guests, and we work really closely with the team. I have noticed before with, you know, speaking to talent, that sometimes managers aren't involved in the podcast side, and I do think, it's to do with the agreement in place. So I do understand both sides, but I do think Grace's podcast has done incredibly well based on the fact she has herself and two teams who genuinely believe this is the most incredible podcast, and we're all striving for the same goal. You know, we're not like against each other, butting heads and being, you know, there's been times, of course, where it's like, no, I think we should do this. And, you know, but we all have the same goal and we all get on very well. And I think, yeah, I feel very honoured to be part of that team.
Love it. Next one, please.
How do I become a talent manager? So there's like at school, college, so you like higher education, get an apprenticeship, get a degree, get work experience, look outside the industry, take a short course or network.
Network.
Mm.
Because
I dropped out of university. I did 3 years of a 4-year degree, yeah. I dropped out and I actually ended up working at a nude magazine in like social media. But that was a time where they would take the girls from the magazine and put them in Love Island. So like Megan Barton Hansen, Demi Rose.
Oh, yeah.
And then they started managing those two people. And that's how I got it. I just sort of fell into it. So I think, you know, they say it's not who you know. It's not what you know. It's who you know. Mm. And I do think that's true. You know, having those right contacts, you can learn anything.
How do you build a network today?
Make sure you go to everything. Like in terms of if there's, even if you're an influencer, what's going to influencer management, you know, when you're getting invited to those events, so especially the Christmas events, go and speak to everyone. That's why I think, you know, sometimes I see people's attitudes, you know, people can be in a bad mood, but one day that those people could be, that runner of that company could be the director of their own company. You know, I've always looked at the people who've been polite to me along the way. And very much, I'm sure you'll see it. People don't know what you do for a living. The way they behave until when they know can be different. And that's a bit, it's a telltale sign.
I agree. Next one, please.
Stat, women dominate deal flow, but there's a 30% pay gap. Yes, exactly what I said. It's true. I knew it was true. I didn't have the stats to go with it.
Keep that one.
Yeah, I keep this. I did know this. You see it, you know. But then the males who do very well, they do incredibly well. So I think in terms of, say, the smaller influencer, say you have 100K on Instagram, it's a woman and a man, that woman will probably be getting paid a little bit more. And I couldn't give you the exact reason. I think it's because of the sales ratio, you know, the ROI on it is just better.
Yeah, for sure. But also the brands that are trying to reach and sell to a female audience, typically they're brands that will probably have more money to spend in the space. They're going to be makeup, going to be lifestyle, beauty, etc. And women spend more money. They're high value consumers. Therefore, they're going to be paid more. It makes sense.
Yeah, I like to spend a lot of money on things that I don't need.
There we go.
TikTok shop has been my devil.
Explain TikTok shop to people who don't, because this is coming for everyone's life and no one sees it unless
it's like
you see
QVC,
it.
QVC, but online. And you know, these brands that you know and love, they do these like very big discounts on TikTok shop, but that's through the lives. I don't watch the lives. Like, it's very good if you're looking for a deal like over Christmas or something. But genuinely, if you go onto a TikTok talent, they'll have their shop, and you can, if they do a video, they can connect it through and they actually make commission off it too. And it's, you know,
your clients made money from it.
Yes, they do.
What kind of money can you make, do you think?
Well, this isn't an accurate representation of ours, because I just don't know the stats, but I do know people who've made like 40 grand a month just on like doing, you know, like an eyebrow tutorial.
Yeah.
And then they sell that product out, or I know that's some crazy. People can go really high with it, like six really? Figures a month. There's a lot of money.
But you
it.
Have to just live and breathe. That's all you do to get
I
that
think
money.
That's like your full-time job.
Because you can't, yeah. Because some people, I mean, fair play, if you make it 40k a month, right? Like, that can yeah. be a full-time job.
And that's like outside of working with TikTok on yeah. like the live streams with TikTok.
Mm.
This is literally just commission-based off just being in your house. Like now I could literally pick up this box and be like, so this box is really lovely. And you know, if I sell those out, I'll make a percentage of commission.
And because TikTok is about, obviously, people going viral and hitting numbers, you don't even have to have a big following in order to do that, right?
No,
as long as your content's like, good.
It's an incredible ROI, really, for everyone to see. All these brands have to do is send some free products. And in return, they could make 60 grand in sales. It's very smart. It makes feature, the man. Next person, it makes everyone be able to do sales.
Yeah, I've seen some ridiculous numbers and stories from TikTok shop, and I feel like it feels like the equivalent of a, you know, Amazon FBA drop shipping a few years ago. It feels like this is the next yeah. big opportunity, because everyone, again, everyone runs to that, but whoever's going to be an early adopter now and actually embrace it is probably going to make a killing. Because also, the more people you end up spending on it, right, mm-hmm. you're probably hitting a tiny fraction of the population who even know it exists or spend mm-hmm. on it, right? Once that starts kicking on, that's proper. Next mm-hmm. one, please.
Power Digital Marketing found that 41.8% of women surveyed indicated they were most likely to try a new product through influencer posts, compared to 30.6% of men who felt similarly. Yeah, I could have told you that. Yep. It's just the way we are as women. We want to look good. We take pride in everything we do. Mm. So, you know, but I think the percentage of men, not like, you know, you go to like a building site, a big geezer, you know, they're not as asked about, you know, having heel like nice boots on for work every day. You know, it's a completely different thing.
Some of them.
So, wow, you know, I think you need to steal toe cap. But it's just a different way of women as a whole.
Mm.
I can't really summarize us, but we live now in an economy where, and like a society where everything is quick. We can get everything. Mm. I ordered something from Zara Saturday. It came on Sunday.
It's the curse of PLT premium, man. What is that? What's that? What that has done to a generation of women, I will...
Yeah, and it's, you know, as well, it's the fact that, you know, everyone goes on Love Island. It's like a PLT deal. PLT have done it very well, actually.
Yeah, they smashed it. But the convenience culture, you're saying, that the desire for next day, next minute, like people don't want to wait. People don't want to wait anymore.
No, it's impatience. Yeah. And, you know, I've been guilty of it too. I had a sofa made. I couldn't believe that every sofa I want was 6 month wait time. I thought, no, it should come next week. And they were like, no, but it gets made. Like, it's like to your spec. I'm like, but the same concept is you say that in management of, I want to be the next biggest star tomorrow. Well, yep. You need to earn your stripes to be that person.
100%. Couldn't agree more. Got one last question for you.
Go on.
8 years ago, when you started managing, what would be your one message, your one, like, alarm bells ringing, whatever it is, to that 21-year-old, looking back now?
Don't believe everything you hear. Not everyone wants to be your friend. Some people do have, like the same, actually, I would say to anyone looking for management. If it sounds too good to be true, it definitely is. Always look at what someone has done and has shown. I think for me, I've always been too trusting. I think it's one of my biggest strengths and biggest weaknesses.
Mm.
But when you're that young, you can't be that trusting. So I think my biggest red flag is, if it sounds too good to be true, it is.
It is.
It is, because, you know, everyone wants a piece of the pie if it's good. You know, when I first started the company when I was 24, people tried to buy us straight away.
Mm.
And I thought, nah, that means I'm onto something here.
Mm.
And I remember how much little people valued it as. And I thought, one day,
you'll
eat your words.
There we go. There we go. Love it. Well, Hannah, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Amazing. So that was Hannah. I hope you really enjoyed that episode and got something from it, especially if you're a female creator. There are so many gems. Obviously, Hannah is at the top of her industry. She really does lead it in this space, and Grace is a perfect case study of that success. So I hope you loved it. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe, and we'll see you back for another episode of Unbox next week.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.